WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air.
Where the air is clean, the road is straight.
Today's singer, songwriter, and guitarist, Billy Strings. Strings is one of the rare bluegrass musicians who can fill arenas with tens of thousands of fans dancing to his innovative blend of traditional music, original songs, and fiery improvisation. He's been working to get to where he is for a long time.
I mean, I slept with my guitar. When I was 4 or 5 years old, I'd put it right under the blankets with me. I used to kiss it goodnight.
He'll also talk about why he decided not to cancel his show the day his mom died, and the addiction struggles his family faced throughout his childhood. First news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today's guest is bluegrass singer, songwriter, and guitarist Billy Strings. He spoke with Fresh Air's Sam Brigger. Here's Sam.
If you ever find yourself at an arena concert where tens of thousands of fans of all ages are stomping about to the Bill Monroe tune Roanoke or the classic bluegrass song Old Slewfoot, chances are you're at a Billy Strings show. A singer, songwriter, and guitarist, Billy Strings is one of the younger generation of musicians carrying the torch for traditional acoustic bluegrass, even while his music incorporates excursions into exploratory improvisational jams and the occasional heavy metal guitar riff. And he's been celebrated by both audiences and the music industry. He's won 2 Grammys, and Highway Prayers, released in 2024, is the first bluegrass album in over 20 years to reach number 1 on Billboard's all-genre Top 100 album sales chart. That album showcases his songwriting and his terrific band. Since then, he's released a live album with another ace bluegrass guitarist, Brian Sutton, called Live at the Legion. The duo performed in a more intimate setting than the arena Strings usually plays in these days, the American Legion Post 82 in East Nashville, playing a lot of music associated with Doc Watson. Let's hear the lead-off track from Live at the Legion, Nashville Blues, originally by the Delmore Brothers.
I've got the blues, those Nashville blues. I've got the blues, those Nashville blues. Ain't got no hat, ain't got no shoes. These people here, they treat me fine. These people here, they treat me fine. Well, they feed me beer, and they feed me wine. And I've got the blues, those Nashville blues. I've got the blues, those Nashville blues. I ain't got no hat, ain't got no shoes.
That's Billy Strings and Brian Sutton on the new album Live at the Legion. Billy Strings, welcome to Fresh Air.
Hey, thank you so much. Good to be here.
So how did the idea for this show and album come about?
Well, we did a live record, I don't know how long ago it was now, but we did one of our shows, you know, of our big jam grass stuff in the arenas, and it's just a different kind of energy, big psychedelic jams and big screaming audiences, and a lot of my favorite live recordings are tiny little small crowds where you can hear somebody knock over a beer bottle or... Yeah. You know, you can hear the crowd, what they're saying. It's like Townes Van Zandt live at the Old Quarter is a big one for me. So, yeah, we just kind of pulled up into the Legion Hall, and they were really cool to let us do that. And we had a small crowd there, and we played a bunch of music that we love. And we got a good recording of it. And Brian Sutton, he's been one of my good friends for quite a few years now, and mentors and heroes, and he is one of the greatest guitar players ever.
Yeah, he's like a generation older than you, but he's perhaps like the go-to bluegrass session guitar player in Nashville these days. And so there's a long tradition of bluegrass guitar duos. There's of course Doc Watson and his son Merle. There's Norman Blake and Tony Rice. Tony Rice and his brother Wyatt. It seems like kind of like a no-brainer, just two people playing guitar together, but it's actually like a little tricky. Your instruments are right in the same range, obviously. You're playing a lot of open strings. There's a lot of fast notes. It can get a little muddy. Like, what do you do so you're making sure you're not stepping on the other person?
You just try to listen. You know, if he's down low, I'll go high, or You know, there's things like that you can do. A lot of these tunes too. A beautiful thing about Doc and Merle and T. Michael Coleman, with those three instruments, they could make a big fat chord, you know. Like when they ended a song and they played a chord, it was just this huge chord, because it's almost like hitting a piano in a couple different spots. You get these guitars to open up and sound big.
A lot of this material comes from Doc Watson, like some of these songs are songs that are part of his repertoire. And you said that most everything you do comes from Doc Watson. Can you talk about his influence on you?
Yeah, he's like the ground upon which I stand, you know. My dad played his music all around the house growing up, and by the time I could play guitar, you know, 5-6 years old, I was learning those tunes too. I might have been able to play some of them before I knew how to tie my shoes or something, you know. It was like I was learning how to speak and talk and walk, and I was learning all these Doc Watson tunes at the same time, and it was just like a religion in my house, you know. His music is just, it's the best. I mean, that's what I was listening to on the way over here, the Sonic Journals, the Owsley thing that he recorded. It's just these beautiful recordings, and gosh, it was so good. Everything they were playing was just churning.
I can hear some of his guitar playing in your playing, but what about his singing? Was that also influential? Like, he didn't have a big range, but he was expressive, and he is singing. I always think of it as very crisp.
I mean, I think his range was really kind of something to behold when you think about it. He had this great low baritone, and he could also yodel and get up into that really high falsetto. And, you know, but with Doc, it was always just spoken. It was always the information of the song came through and the conversation of it. You know, people like him, people like Willie Nelson, people like Dolly Parton, these really great storytellers, when they're singing, you know, if you see Dolly Parton on TV singing and you press mute, it just looks like she's talking to you, because she is. She's telling the story. You know, that's one big thing that one of my vocal coaches that I've been working with, one of the big things that I took from some of those lessons was just give me the information. You know, I get on stage and I sing and I'm so worried about the pitch. Am I singing good? Is the tone good? Am I singing right? How's my timing? This and that. It's like taking the kids to the park and you're scared to let them go down the slide because you don't want them to get hurt. Yeah. It's like, geez, let them play, you know? And so if you focus on the story and telling the words, and you know, it's just like, I know where the pitch is. I just need to tell the story.
So you're doing that more?
Trying to. It's easier said than done, all this stuff. You know, all the music, kind of zen, kind of mindful stuff that I've been getting into. It's kind of the inner game stuff. You know, I mean, I'm high strung. I got a lot of anxiety and stress, and I'm moving around a lot. I've been really busy the last several years, and I got a lot of my own personal stuff that just haunts me on a daily basis, and I try to do everything I can to just be cool and get my nervous system to chill, but it just seems like I don't know what I can do to calm it. You know, I do the best I can and I'm doing okay, but it's a daily kind of struggle to just stay on the ground.
Does playing guitar help, or is playing guitar all caught up in all of that stuff because that's what you do for a living?
It depends on what kind of playing guitar, you know. If I'm on stage, that's where the joy is, you know. That's where the fun is. I kind of ride myself pretty hard about practice off stage.
Well, let's talk about that. You know, I noticed on social media like a year ago or so, you were popping up endorsing this online guitar program and talking about how you felt like you'd reached a plateau and you wanted to get better and get out of that. So what was going on?
The more I play shows, the more shows I play in a row, the more you can drive yourself back into these old default kind of almost like a rut of playing licks you always play, or playing, you know, you almost get sick of hearing yourself play the same thing, and you're just going, oh, this is, you know, I'm not impressed with myself.
You know, I think it's, I don't know, there's something really honest about you talking about that, because here you are, you're playing for tens of thousands of people. Like, you're an incredible guitar player, and yet you still want to improve, and you care about your craft, and, you know, you're willing to talk about it. Like, I imagine there's people who are famous guitar players too who take lessons, but they probably wouldn't talk about it.
I don't know. I mean, what do you want me to say? I've kind of always thought I sort of sucked, you know, because I'm me. I'm going to be my own worst critic always. But I'm just, yeah, of course I'm going to talk about it. I mean, it's kind of interesting. It's like I never really took lessons. I just learned how to play from hanging out with my dad and listening to him play with my old Brad Lasko, my Uncle Brad. And I kind of just was seeped in this Monroe and Stanley Brothers and Flat and Scruggs and Larry Sparks and Jimmy Martin and Osborne Brothers and you know, of course, mainly Doc Watson. And I was kind of just soaked in that and marinated in that since I was a little kid. And that's how I just heard everything. It's kind of how I hear music. But I never took any lesson. I still don't know what a harmonic minor is. I don't know what the word like diatonic means. I don't, you know, I have no freaking idea. I have a very limited understanding of these music words that people use. So then I get into these sessions, right? Because I'm Bela Fleck says, hey, come play on my record. And I'm sitting in a room with Bela Fleck and Edgar Meyer and Chris Thiele, and they're saying, oh yeah, it's just, you know, this is in, they're counting with all these numbers and letters and hieroglyphs and all sorts of stuff. And I'm just like, man, I don't even know what any of this means. I just know the song goes, duck a duck a down, dun dun ka duck a duck a duck a bow, duck a down bow, dun ka doom, biddle diddle diddle. That's how the song goes to me. I couldn't tell you it in a math equation.
Well, Billy, if you wouldn't mind doing another song for us that's one of your favorites.
I could do, told you on the way over here, I was listening to that Bears Sonic Journals, Doc and Merle, T. Michael. And man, they were sounding good, and they were doing this number here. It's called the Browns Ferry Blues.
Hard luck, pop, coming down the lane. Mama getting back his walking cane. Lord, Lord, I got them Browns Ferry Blues. Well, he throwed it away and he went to town to see a little woman and now he's down. Lord, Lord, I got them Browns Ferry Blues. Hard but puff, you're getting too tight. You don't quit drinking, you're high as kite. Lord, Lord, I got them Browns Ferry Blues. Take a block and tackle kind. You can walk a block and tackle a lion. Lord, Lord, I got them Browns Ferry Blues. Well, I walked up to my girl's old man and I asked him for my true love's hand. Lord, Lord, I got them Browns Ferry Blues. Said you la la little cool. Lord, Lord, I got them Browns Ferry Blues. Hard luck, pop, standing in the rain. The world was corn, you couldn't buy grain. Lord, Lord, I got them Browns Ferry Blues. Walk around in second and close, smell his feet wherever he goes. Lord, Lord, I got them Browns Ferry Blues.
That's Billy Strings playing Doc Watson. He'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air.
Thank you.
This is Fresh Air. Our guest today is singer, songwriter, and guitarist Billy Strings. He has two recent albums, Highway Prayers, which is a collection of his original songs played with his longstanding bluegrass band, and Live at the Legion, a bluegrass guitar duo album of more traditional songs with Brian Sutton. So, Billy, last year you came out with your album Highway Prayers. I wanted to play the second song from the album, In the Clear. This song is in the long tradition of happy-sounding, up-tempo bluegrass songs with really depressing lyrics. Can you talk about writing it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think this one was one that I wrote with my buddy Aaron Allen. He's a frequent collaborator. Me and him and John Weisberger get together a lot of times, and we've written quite a few songs together now. But as soon as I started reading some of the words, I knew I could hear it in my head that it happens like that a lot of times. You know, if I write something down, I'm thinking of the music as I'm writing it, you know, and it's like I write with the melody, you know.
This is the second song from the album, In the Clear, so why don't we hear this?
Days. So I ain't my moral compass, but it's spinning like a wheel. You could take that many different ways. I've had days as black as night, time and nights that lasted years. I spent 1,000 hours on my knees. Broke down and started praying, but I was pleading with the wind just to never feel the difference in the breeze. They say heaven knows the road is slow. Just where am I supposed to go from here? How much longer now before I'm in the clear?
That's the song In the Clear from our guest Billy Strings' 2024 album, Highway Prayers. And this is with the band that you've been with for a while now. It's Billy Failing on banjo, Jared Walker on mandolin, Royal Massat on bass, and a newer member, Alex Hargraves, on fiddle. Well, Billy, some of your songs deal with some pretty heavy subjects that you've dealt with in your life, including, you know, losing friends to suicide, family and friends who are dealing with addiction, you know, feeling neglect when you were a kid. When you write songs about that stuff, is it helping you process those experiences? Is it easy to sing about that stuff once you've written the songs?
Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it is definitely it's how I felt when I sang on stage the night my mom died. It was cathartic. It's cathartic. I've had songs that I've written, you know, about something totally different that I didn't realize I wrote for myself until months later. I write these words thinking that I'm giving some information to some people that might could hear it. Really, I'm the one that needs to hear it. And I wrote that for myself so that I could heal. And now I go sing it on stage. And there's also been songs, Stratosphere Blues and I Believe in You. You know, the other night I was singing that on stage, and you know, like I said, I wrote that before my mom had died, and now singing it after is just different. It's like I knew something or something, you know.
I'm sorry about your mom passing away. She died this last June. Would you mind singing a verse of that?
I could try. Let's see.
Couldn't help but wonder why you threw yourself away. Come on out from under and just take it day by day. It's true. I believe in you.
on a thaw. It's kinda hard to get through all the things we ain't been taught. It's true, but I believe in you. After all the years of medication, feels good to get your life on track. Long as you live, I'm sorry to tell you, you never get that monkey off your back.
Yeah, something like that anyways, you know.
Yeah, that's a beautiful song. Thank you for playing that.
No problem, man.
If you're just joining us, our guest today is Billy Strings. His two most recent albums are Live at the Legion with guitar player Brian Sutton, and from 2024, Highway Prayers. I'm Sam Brigger, and this is Fresh Air.
The Neubauer Family Foundation supports WHYY's Fresh Air and its commitment to sharing ideas and encouraging meaningful conversation. Support for NPR comes from this station. And from Subaru, the 2025 Subaru Outback features symmetrical all-wheel drive plus standard safety features like EyeSight Driver Assist technology. Learn more at Subaru.com/Outback. And from Workday. Workday is an AI platform for forward thinkers, dedicated to transforming the way business leaders manage people, money, and agents today so they can transform tomorrow. Workday, moving business forever forward.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Sam Brigger. Our guest is multi-Grammy Award-winning singer, songwriter, and guitarist Billy Strings. He's been an innovator in the world of bluegrass, as well as someone with a great knowledge and respect for that music's history. His two recent albums, one is a live duet with another amazing bluegrass guitarist, Brian Sutton, called Live at the Legion, where they play a lot of music associated with Doc Watson, and Highway Prayers with his bluegrass band playing his original songs. Well, Billy, when your mom died this last June, I think you heard in the morning, and you had a gig that night. You decided to play it. You got on stage, and you made an emotional announcement about it, and you said that your mom would have wanted you to go on. She wouldn't have wanted you to cancel the show. Why is that?
The only reason she died is so she could, space travel and be there. She was at all the shows, She was always in the mix, right up front. She'd show up in New Orleans or Seattle or somewhere, and I wouldn't even know she was coming. She freaking hitchhiked there, I was like, what? She walks in my green room. What the hell? You didn't even tell me you were coming, She was just a wild one, and she was really living her best life in this last little bit. She had become quite involved with a lot of my friends and fans you know, that go to every show and go out and in the lot and stuff. And she became really close to a lot of these people. And I was always had mixed feelings about that.
What do you mean?
Well, I wanted her to go have fun and be doing, you know, whatever she wanted to be doing. But I worried about her running into the wrong people, or, you know, she's been an addict my whole life and had short stints where she was doing pretty good, you know. And I love to see her out there hanging with all the fans, but at the same time, I was leery of them. You know, I would go over to visit my parents' house, and there would be, like, the fans there that I see in the front row of my concerts all the time.
People you knew or did it, or just knew as fans?
Mostly I just recognize them from the crowd, you know, and then I get to know them because they're hanging out with my parents or something. But, you know, and what am I supposed to say? Like, don't do that? I don't know. They're grown people, but I don't know. She was getting older, and I kind of just had this vision of her in my head that I wanted, which is stupid. It's not realistic to try to come up with somebody else's life in your brain, but, like, I just wanted her to have a garden. And my dad, 70 years old, she was 64. I was like, man, you guys should, like, be settling down, you know, don't you think? Instead of raring and tearing and going and eating all these shrooms and going to all these concerts. And then she did get wrapped up in the wrong stuff, and that's why she's not here anymore.
I'm sorry, this might be too personal, but did she overdose? Is that?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's messed with me my whole life, and now it's going to mess with me for the rest of it. You know, I have complex post-traumatic stress, and I have anxiety and depression, and I have for years tried to deal with this stuff just that happened to me when I was a kid. You know, it wasn't just being neglected and there not being food in the house and, you know, my parents being strung out, and I miss them even though they're sitting right in front of me. And it's like, while they were partying and, you know, stuff like that, I was around the corner being molested, you know, before I was 10 years old, and all that stuff, you know, and I've had to deal with that, you know. And it's a really hard thing because there's such beautiful people and they taught me so much about music. But yeah, their addiction has been really hard on me for my whole life, and it still is. And really triggering to lose her in this manner, you know?
Well, I'm sorry. I hope talking about it is not triggering any hard feelings for you right now.
I gotta talk about it because it's like my whole life I've had to keep a secret in order to try to not make them look bad, you know? Like, even when I was in high school, I spoke to a counselor one time. I mean, I was in 10th grade, but I was couch surfing. I didn't live with them, you know. I moved out when I was like 13 because the house was no longer a home. They were strung out, and it's a wonder I was even going to school. And one time I got pulled into a counselor instead of the principal's office, you know, and they said, what's going on, you know, and I finally just, they told me anything I say is between them, and it won't leave the room. And I said, yeah, my parents are on meth, and I don't even live there, and my house got raided right after that. You know, that same day, 5 state cops came up, raided the house. I almost sent my mom to prison because I opened my mouth. And from then on, I never said shit to anybody about anything. It hurts me, but what hurts me is I've always just been worried about them, you know? And I've always wanted them to be good. And when I say be good, I mean to be well and happy and have some sunshine in their life. You know, a few years ago, I was able to buy them a home. My parents, and stuff was good for a while, but, you know, it really breaks my heart that it went back to this, and now she's gone. And so I think my duty here is to continue doing what I'm doing, for one thing, use all that beautiful energy that I get from her, that crazy wild streak. I got to use that and, you know, honor her in that way. And I feel a great kind of duty as far as just writing down these words, making these songs for people to heal from. And also, you know, who knows, maybe someday I'll actually be able to help kids that are in the situation that I was in. Maybe I'll be able to help their parents, you know, like open a rehab or something like that to help combat this, because it's really hard, you know.
Yeah. Are you taking some time for yourself it right now? Like, are you able to take some time off the road? And you have a young family now. That's at home.
Yeah, right? They're with me on the road.
Oh, they go with you on the road.
Yeah. Heck yeah, man. So yeah, I got the whole gang, and we're out there traveling, and it's really cool. It's awesome. And so yeah, I've just been leaning into that, leaning on my family, you know, my band.
Let's hear one of your songs from Highway Prayers, which is all about being on the road, leaning on a traveling song. And this starts out with some great bluegrass harmonies and also some really terrific fiddles playing together. So let's hear that.
Where the air is clear and the road is straight, all the choices have been made. I'll keep rolling right along, leaning on a traveling song. Darkness from the sky, behind the wheel where I belong, leaning on a traveling song.
That's Leaning on a Traveling Song from Billy Strings, our guest today, from his album Highway Prayers. If you're just joining us, our guest is musician Billy Strings. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Imaginable Futures, funding programs in the U.S. with the goal of ensuring young children and their parents get the education they need to thrive. Learn more at imaginablefutures.com. And from AEG Presents, with Leve live in concert on her A Matter of Time tour, performing this fall at arenas across the country. More information is at amatteroftimetour.com.
This is Fresh Air. Our guest today is singer, songwriter, and guitarist Billy Strings. He has two recent albums, Highway Prayers, which is a collection of his original songs played with his longstanding bluegrass band, and Live at the Legion, a bluegrass guitar duo album of more traditional songs with Brian Sutton. Earlier we talked about Doc Watson, and I wanted to ask if you'd play a tune that maybe was one of the earlier songs that you learned as a kid.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I mostly just played rhythm. So I'll give an example of that. My dad, he would play this. You know,
that's the fiddle tune, Beaumont Rag.
Yeah, and so I would play. You know, and so that's how I started, and that's kind of what I did for the first few years of playing. I was my dad's rhythm player, and that gave me a chance to just listen to how the songs worked, to just kind of stay there in the bass kind of notes and listen to the melodies and listen to the harmonies, how the vocals work together. And that kind of bluegrass harmony just seeped into my ears, I guess. And later on, I got an electric guitar, a little mini Squire Strat and a Pignose amp for Christmas one year. I think I was probably 9 or 10 or so. And that was my first time really trying to play solos and stuff like that. But it was more, I was getting into Hendrix and I was playing more, you know, Guitar Center stuff. When I got into middle school, I wanted to play with people that were my age, you know. I'd always played with my dad and his friends, and some of them were much older, and I just wanted to play music with people that were into the same stuff as I was, like skateboarding and video games, whatever, you know. And so the only thing that was really going on in my middle school at the time was heavy metal, and I went to a couple shows, and I hated it at first. It was like, this is not music, you know. I don't know what this is, but it ain't music. But I fell into that friend group, and then next thing you know, I acquired a taste for this music, and then I fell in love with it. But after my bands kept breaking up and falling apart, I kind of got back into Doc Watson at this time, and just bluegrass in general. This would have been around the time that stuff was really rough around the house. I remember specifically stealing my mom's old Chevelle one day.
How old were you?
14, 15. You know, because I'd go over to my parents' house and hang out with them and stay there and party. And it's not like I just totally left and disowned them. I just, once I realized stuff wasn't going to change, I mean, I didn't end up really moving back there, but I'd go there for a weekend and hung out there a bunch, but wasn't like my home.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I stole my mom's car one day when I was just sitting around getting drunk by myself. And that's how bored I was, and that's how kind of there was nothing to do in this town. I mean, there's 600 people that live here. There's nothing to do. So I was just getting drunk during the day, and I stole mom's car, and I went down Hayes Road, this old country road with cornfields on either side. And, man, I put the pedal to the floor, and I was going, and that corn was just a blur on either side. And there was a tape sticking halfway out of the deck, and I pushed it in, and I'm like, I wonder what my mom's listening to, right? And then this is what came on. I was in those heavy metal bands and all this stuff, and I hadn't really been listening to bluegrass very much, but I was kind of heartbroken at the way my life was at the time. And when I heard
I wandered again to my home in the mountain,
you know, Rank Stranger came on. That's what my mom had in her tape deck. And I just started slowing that old car down until I came to a complete stop, and I just pulled over on the side of the road and I started crying. And I was drunk, you know, but this song hit me right in my heart. In that moment, I was like, what am I even doing in these heavy metal bands? Bluegrass is where my heart is. This is the music I should be playing. And at that time, I started hunting for an acoustic guitar, you know, and my friend Zach had one. And one of the first tunes I learned how to actually pick, how to play the lead on and stuff, it was a thing called Nothing to It. It goes like this.
Is that one of those licks that you're now tired of, or you still like it?
Oh, I love it. I mean, yeah, it's still the best. I mean, any of that Doc Watson stuff.
you decided at some point that like playing guitar was your way out, was kind of like your salvation and a way to get out of the kind of life that your mom and dad were leading. But what point, though, did you sort of realize, like, I could make a living doing this, I could really get somewhere,
well, or that hopefully wasn't, get somewhere? That wasn't until I was about 18 years old or so. I failed all through school. I graduated from an alternative ed. The only reason I graduated is because I was selling mushrooms, and I was able to pay this kid $5 per assignment, $25 a week, to help me get the answers to algebra so that I could graduate. So I graduated a year late from an alternative ed thing, but, you know, I had dropped out several times in those years. They filed truancy on me, all this stuff. I stopped paying attention in sixth grade, you know what I mean? By the time I tried to apply myself, they were talking about trigonometry. I was way late.
Well, but so you must have at some point, like, decided to take this leap of faith, I mean, try to make it.
Well, when I graduated high school, I was kind of in this situation where it was like, okay, I need to get out of Ionia because nothing's happening here and I'm just going to end up going down a bad road if I stay here. I'm going to end up OD'd or in prison or, you know, it's just, it did not look good. The way I felt is in Ionia, it was black and white, gray. And I moved up to Traverse City, Michigan. A friend of mine, Brendan Lauer, bless his beautiful little heart, he had a room and he said, hey man, you want to come stay up in Traverse City? We need a roommate. Hell yeah. So I went up to Traverse City, man, and all of a sudden it was like Technicolor. It was like beaches and there was like microbreweries and art galleries and people like singer-songwriters and there was like coffee shops and people were into like art and stuff. And so I started doing a couple open mic nights up there just messing around because this is when I was studying Doc Watson kind of heavy again. I got acoustic guitar. And I was just sitting at home posting myself with no shirt on freaking YouTube or whatever, you know, trying to show off my new tattoo. But I went and did some open mic nights up there. And, man, I played Black Mountain Rag or something, and I got a standing ovation. And I go, whoa, holy crap. It's like these folks either love Doc Watson or they've never heard anything like this before.
Yeah. Your dad taught you how to play guitar. Have you picked out a guitar for your son yet? Do you plan to teach him the way your dad taught you?
Well, he's already got one that he just bangs on the floor. I gave him this Martin Dreadnought Jr. It used to be my guitar. I just practiced on the bus and stuff. And I took tape and I covered up all the pokey parts on where the strings are on top. And I wrapped them real good so he can't poke himself on that. Yeah.
So when are you going to start teaching him how to play the strings?
Oh, man, like I said, he's...
He's already gone.
He's 10 months, and he's just banging on it. But I sing for him all the time. It's always the best. I remember that first night when we got home, the night of my 32nd birthday, the first time I was able to be at home with my son, and I held him, and I sang this little song. I'll sing a bit of it for you. He went to sleep in my arms when I was singing this to him, and probably the best moment of my entire life, besides maybe just the moment he was born. But there's this little lullaby. Saying that to him and he fell asleep. That was like the best.
Well, Billy Strings, I want to thank you so much for coming on Fresh Air today.
Thank you for having me.
Billy String's latest album is called Live at the Legion. He spoke with Fresh Air's Sam Brigger. Special thanks to Brian McGlynn at Audio Productions in Nashville. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. The harp has never been commonplace in jazz, but it's not a novelty either. In the 50s, Dorothy Ashby pioneered a space for the instrument, mastering bebop, soul jazz, and other hybrids. Alice Coltrane, a high school classmate of Ashby's, received a harp as a gift from her husband, the legendary saxophonist John Coltrane, and she used it to create a style often called spiritual jazz. Brenda Younger follows in their footsteps, using the harp in many styles of jazz and popular music. For instance, she's played on sessions with Common, Lauryn Hill, and The Roots. Younger's own music embraces a broad range of jazz and jazz-adjacent styles. On her new recording, Gadabout Season, she plays Coltrane's instrument and updates the style of the great harpist's early recordings.
That's Brandy Younger's song, Reckoning, the lead track on her new recording. There are a few trends that distinguish jazz in the 2020s as the rise of the harp. Its shimmering grace is perfect for the textural focus of so many composers, and the instrument's history as a cornerstone of spiritual jazz and as a jazz ambassador in related genres provide the perfect entrance for Brandy Younger on the scene. She's championed the work of her artistic foremothers, and she's played on sessions with Common, Lauryn Hill, and The Roots. In that regard, she has many allies among young musicians who dote on different styles. Here, she's joined by fellow rising stars Shabaka, Micaiah McRaven, and Joel Ross on the title track. Unlike Dorothy Ashby and Alice Coltrane, Younger is not alone among harpists. There are others like Edmar Castaneda, Destiny Muhammad, Isabel Olivier, to name a few. Younger's style deftly uses her instrument's full range. She can give it an assertive weight of a guitar or austere reserve of electronic instruments. The harp's ability to be both chordal and percussive enables her to move freely in a tune. But as a soloist, she can command center stage, as she does on Breaking Point. That's about as insistent as Younger gets. This recording, more so than her others, delves deeply into the spiritual side of jazz. It's not laid back, but it is elegantly minimal music that invites contemplation. It's as if she's creating a safe space for reconsideration, which Alice Coltrane's late 60s and early 70s recordings did. But as she demonstrates on New Pinnacle, rather than retro, it feels very of the moment.
Martin Johnson writes about jazz for the Wall Street Journal and Downbeat. He reviewed Brandi Younger's new album, Gadabout Season. Tomorrow on Fresh Air, my guest will be Rob Reiner. We'll talk about directing the new sequel to Spinal Tap, the groundbreaking mockumentary about a heavy metal band. We'll also talk about Reiner's remarkable life and career. He directed When Harry Met Sally, The Princess Bride, A Few Good Men, Stand By Me, and more, and was a star of the sitcom All in the Family. I hope you'll join us. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our technical director and engineer is Audrey Bentham. Our managing producer is Sam Brigger. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Phyllis Myers, Roberto Shurrock, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Lauren Krenzel, Monique Nazareth, Thea Challoner, Susan Yakundi, Anna Bauman, and John Sheehan. Our digital media producer is Molly C.V. Nesper. Our consulting visual producer is Hope Wilson. Teresa Madden directed today's show. Our co-host is Tanya Mosley. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Mathnasium. Whether students are ahead of the curve or need extra support, Mathnasium's goal is to build skills and confidence through personalized math instruction to help students achieve their potential this school year. Learn more at mathnasium.com. And from the estate of Joan V. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio, and seeks to help NPR produce programming that meets the highest standards of public service in journalism and cultural expression.